Wanted to let you know that Fuse 2020 early bird registration is now open. Next year's AIM Fuse National Conference will be on September 26th in Las Vegas. Make sure to go to events.aimgroup.com to secure your limited time early bird discount. Hey, welcome to Broker. This podcast is all about real talk from one broker to another. Each week, we'll be talking with an AIM member about their journey into the broker channel, their challenges, and unique insights. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. All right, welcome to Broker, brought to you by AIM, Association of Independent Mortgage Experts. I'm your host, JP Hussey of the Hussey Team Mortgage Advisors, and today we have Jason Sharon of Home Loans, Inc., right? And first off, thank you for your service.
You're worth it, sir.
Hey, man, I appreciate that. We wouldn't be able to have these type of conversations in many countries, right?
Sure, absolutely.
The freedom to do that, so I want to make sure we brought that up, so thank you again. But I want to get into Home Loans, Inc. We were talking about that through text the other day.
Sure.
I'm like, how in the hell did you get Home Loans as the name of your company?
Man, it was luck. I mean, I just played around on GoDaddy a bunch, and that one popped up. And
how long ago was this?
That was about 2 years ago.
Whoa, yeah. That wasn't taken.
No. I've only been, a broker for a little bit over a year and a half. Before brokers were cool, but I was right at the beginning, the ramp up there, and I was retail for 3 years and was about ready to get out of the business. I was just so frustrated with my company and the industry of, or at least my perspective on it, because that's all I knew.
Sure.
And I was like, man, I'm going to get out and do something different. And then just one moment, I'm like, bing, maybe I'll open up my own company. And decided to be a broker and start playing around with names.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a bit, but I want to learn a little bit more about you, right? 20-year Navy vet.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah,
I hit that right? So you're married, right?
Correct.
Wife, kids?
Yep.
You want to get into that?
Sure. Wife at Tia. We've been married
a
couple
years.
Shout
out to Tia.
And then I've got three older kids. One's at Auburn in pre-vet.
Nice.
And then the other two are in high school, 16 and 17 years old.
Cool. South Carolina, right?
Charleston.
I went there the first time earlier in the year.
Gotcha.
And they had the U.S. Women's Open out there this year. I don't know if you saw that or remember that, and went out there with my dad and two brothers, and it's a great city, man.
It's
different from Philly, but it's good to have some East Coast people here.
Sure.
A lot of people from Cali the past couple of weeks, so it's cool, man.
Yeah, Charleston is a wonderful town. It's charming. It's voted friendliest city in America every year. Lots of weddings. I think only Vegas has more weddings per year than Charleston. I mean, it's a great town.
Nice, yeah. Nice loan limits too.
Yep.
There for the most part, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, good old town. Charleston's really really cool. We got the walk through there and did a tour and everything.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right, so let's dive in about the business side, the mortgage side.
Sure.
When did you get in? I know you've been a broker about a year and a half.
Yeah,
but could you give me the timeline?
I think I got my license January, February of 2015. Right.
Okay.
And started working for a retail shop. And how I got there was back 10 years earlier, while still active duty, part-time, I got my real estate license.
Okay.
And then being transferred, I kind of let the license go. And then when I retired from the Navy, I was like, well, what am I going to do? Started thinking about mortgages, started thinking about insurance. I reached out to my old mortgage guy and said, hey, Wade, what do you think? He's like, well, why don't you come see what we do? And then he hired me as a loan officer, and I couldn't spell FHA. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was good.
Yeah, I mean, so you're a newbie, man.
Yeah, I'm very new.
I mean, I got in 2011.
Okay.
And a lot of people consider me new, being eight, nine years in the business, but man, 2015,
right?
You got in on the retail side, right? And then I'm guessing about a year and a half after that, you decided to open up Home Loans?
No. So in South Carolina, you have to be licensed for 3 years before you could open your own company. So
that goes to show you every state's different,
right?
Everyone getting your license.
So the end of 17 is when I got really disenfranchised and started thinking about change of career, and had the epiphany of, maybe I'll open up my own company. At that point, it was just an enlightenment. Like, wow, yeah, this would be amazing. Had to wait till March. So I guess I had to wait till March for my 3 year point. And so I applied in March, got approved in April by South Carolina regulator, closed my first loans in May of last year on my own. And I didn't know any, and I was a spoiled rotten retail brat. I didn't know anything about anything, you know, in processing. Processing was a magic box that I put in a contract in, and I got a commission check out. I had no idea. So whenever I started my own company, this was before the broker, the box, all the help, that kind of stuff. I couldn't spell VOE. I didn't know what that was. The whole idea of getting an AMC or signing up for a credit report.
It's a big
company,
shock to people.
I had no idea. And kind of funny is once I figured that out and I was, people were seeing me be successful with that, I started having some retail loan officers, even before this became a big push for retail, reach out to me. And I remember sitting down and giving my business plan to two retail loan officers, saying, hey, if you want to do it here, this is what I did. And now one of those retail loan officers works for me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, kind of funny.
So you were always, in the back of your mind, even before you even thought about mortgages, you always had this kind of entrepreneur type mindset, would you say?
Absolutely.
So you went into this, like, I want to own a business. And it just happens to be in mortgages?
Right. I've owned other businesses along the way. I've owned I've owned retail shops, like owned a chain of coin shops, buying some old coins.
Oh, all right.
Historic items.
Oh, I like this stuff.
I'm a coin collector. I love historic documents, that kind of stuff.
Oh, cool. So being in Charleston's a pretty good spot for you. I mean, that's so historical. I mean,
that's where the Civil War started. I mean, that's where the first shots were fired. I mean, there's just an amazing amount of history there.
Yeah, so they call us up here. They still call us Yankees.
Absolutely.
I remember being down there, and it's funny, man. It's funny when you do it. When everyone was awesome.
Sure.
But there's a little ball bust, which is good, you know?
Yep.
All right, so you got in. Like you said, you've owned other businesses, so this is always something that you've done.
Yes.
I was going to ask why. Why'd you pick the mortgage side? But you kind of gave us a story there.
Yep.
So you jumped in. This is 2018, right? Because you had to 3 years.
Yep.
You had to wait. Now, what made you go from retail to the broker? Was there like an epiphany? And like, I want to go on this side of the business.
Well, so I even
was this the easiest spot to start a business?
To be honest with you, it was the barrier of entry. It seemed like to me, it was easier to open up my own broker shop than it was to open up a retail shop in South Carolina.
Okay, so state specific again. Right. I want everyone to know that. It's not just, you know, you just go open it up. It's the same thing everywhere, you know, and we'll get into maybe some compliance and things like that if you don't mind. But
So just because it was the easiest wasn't the deciding factor. Whenever I started looking at what a broker meant versus what being a net branch at, you know, a Fairway or something like that. Because I talked to two or three different lenders that were recruiting me whenever they heard that I was, you know, I was not, you know, real happy. I started looking at it and I realized, you know, having, you know, and I always say 54 options for a client versus being handcuffed to one set of requirements, one set of funding. It was a no-brainer why anybody would choose one over the other.
Sure.
You know, if you really wanted to be the best for the consumer, which makes sense.
Yeah. I've talked to other people on the show here about control, and in the past, broker meant not control. You just kind of got the deal, throw it against the wall, throw out a couple different lenders, and see what happens. That's a misconception. When you say actually have more control, we have more options, and each client's different, each consumer's different, and we have a spot to put them given their situation.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I tell people all the time, I feel like I'm the hot chick at prom. Everybody wants to dance with me.
Nice.
You know, it's a supply and demand.
Throw a dress on you later.
Yeah, exactly, man. the lenders know, you know, that if they screw up that loan, I'm not sending them the next one. The underwriters know that. The underwriters know if they have provided bad service. So, I mean, I get called by every underwriter on every deal. Because they want to provide customer service. That never happened for me in retail. Mm-hmm. It was a fight to get the underwriter to even look at your loan in a reasonable time. It was a fight to get them to look at it the way you wanted them to.
Sure.
And I definitely didn't have the opportunity to speak with them on a routine basis to tell them the story of the client. Even if I did a loan officer LOX on, hey, this is the great, and I do this a lot. The Smiths are a great family. They're moving here because of this. You know, they have the kids. You know, this is their situation. I put that in almost every one of my loans, so that way the underwriter understands them as a person, not as a number. And
transaction,
that just didn't happen. That just wasn't a possibility.
It was just a transaction.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. Now, you being so new to the industry, right? And like you said, you didn't know what a VOE was getting in, right? Being so new to this, like, what did you do to ramp up and learn the industry? Because you're in a good spot now, right?
Yeah, I'm in a tremendous spot. But from day, probably not day one, probably 100 days into the career, I made it a point to spend 15 minutes in the regulations every day. So on my desk, okay, I've got a 1-inch binder with VA guidelines in it. Not the whole darn, you know, not the whole 837 pages, but, you know, it's got chapter 5, it's got chapter 8. It's got, you know, several things in there. And I just pick up the book 15 minutes a day, you know, from about 7:45 to 8 and go through what's, you know, go through a regulation. I've got a USDA binder, I've got an FHA binder, and I've got a conforming binder of just, you know, of income calcs, your credit underwriting, asset, you know, the mm-hmm. minimum property conditions.
These are all printed out?
Yeah, printed out.
Yeah, that's old school. I like that.
And because it's so much easier. If you've got it sitting there looking at you, you're going to do it.
You'll get distracted, too, on the laptop or whatnot. Yeah.
Whereas if, you're just going to the 4,000 manual in your favorites, you know, you're going to get distracted by these 15 emails that pop up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so
cool.
So you got to be the smartest guy in the room. How that's helped me is, like, year to date, I've closed, I think, about 140 units, maybe 145 units year to date.
That's awesome, man.
Of those 140 units, 29 of them were declined elsewhere.
Okay.
So it's not because I'm amazing or anything like that. It's just I'm, you know, because I put the regulations in my head. When people call me, they're like, I get declined by this. I'm like, oh, well, that's stupid. Why don't we just structure this way? You know, and then you close the deal, and, you know, if 29 deals is not chump change. You know, it's worth it.
Yeah, we had a couple guys on the other day, Josh Lewis, Scott Shank, and they have a website. I want to get to your websites too, because we mm-hmm. talked about that. They have a website that specifically, I mean, it's more than just this, but they look for turndowns.
Sure.
Because they know the guidelines so well, and they know maybe Quicken or someone else, or mm-hmm. maybe in a call center, and that's just kind of churning around. They won't go the extra mile for the client.
Right.
And they set up to get those type of clients in, which is cool. So that's happened with you. Do you do anything like that? Are you asking for turndowns, or they just kind of came to you for a second opinion? Or
What I've been doing is I've been posting social media of, hey, I just closed this deal that was declined elsewhere.
Okay.
Call me, you know, whenever you got a turndown. And I'm not wanting to go after that business, but it's one of those where if you get that one, then obviously you score that, you know, listing agent, you score that buyer's agent. Obviously, those people are thrilled because they were just crying, thinking they weren't going to be able to buy that home that they were in love with, and now you're their mortgage hero.
And how awesome does that feel when you get an actual family that thought they couldn't do this into a home?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's good
amazing.
Making money and doing the thing, but I think that's what drives everyone I've talked to, that's what actually drives them. Money's not driving them.
No, absolutely not.
That's the icing on the cake.
So, yeah, I mean, and I'm doing okay. You know, I've
got
businesses. Yeah. You know, I'm retired Navy. I've got a VA pension. I'm okay. I could not get out of bed, and all my bills are paid.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, doing this, helping people that, you know, wouldn't be able to do it, or are getting them a significantly better deal than what the status quo is out there is what makes it happen. That's what makes it
that's
worthwhile.
Cool. Now, in a little bit, I do want to get into marketing and what you're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm getting from you is, like, you're a businessman.
Absolutely.
So if we put the mortgage to the side a bit, right, this is where I want to dive in. This is curious to me because I just started my first business earlier in the year, right? So this is a blessing for me to sit and talk to people about this. So when you started the business, could you dive into, like, where you started? Like, you're a very regimented guy, I can tell.
Absolutely.
Right? I'm very reactive. We're kind of opposites at this point. But starting the actual business side, like, where did you start? You had a game plan, you saw it into the future, and then you set a goal? Like, could you talk about whether it's the coin business or mortgage?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the application of it to the mortgage business was doing a good amount of volume with a decent amount of profit, not going out, you know, trying to kill it on every deal, but, you know, a decent amount of profit to make it worthwhile, not discounting. I didn't want to run a discount shop, but I wanted to have it, you know, I wanted to have it to where people respected it and and obviously you have to have some niche. And what I figured out really quickly was was buying out underwriting fees on every single deal, and then I sell that. It's the easiest thing in the world. Like, yeah, I've got no fees. And I explain what Section A is a lot, or Box A a lot, to clients, you know, from the loan estimate and the CD. And I'm like, look, your closing costs will be significantly less with me, and you've got me. I'm your advocate. You know, I work on your behalf. You're the boss, you know, kind of thing. And cool. And going that route is the way that I started positioning myself. And that became very attractive to realtors. It became very attractive to clients. It became very attractive to other loan officers as they learned what I was doing. So the whole idea of establishing a business and then starting building the brand around it by talking about what I was doing was the concept.
Yeah, yeah. Now, some of the actual like details with starting a business. Now, everyone's going to be different. Now, well, let's talk about your business real quick. It's you. Is there anyone else working with you?
So, absolutely. So, I've got 5 full-time staff, cool. 3 process, and 2 are LOAs.
So you're the rainmaker, right. And you're the only LO for the most part.
No, I've got LOs. Some retail. I've got some loan officers as well. I'm probably 75% of the business. But I didn't recruit. There were 2 LOs that came over. They were branch managers in retail, and heard good things about me and saw what I was doing and said, "Hey, I want to come work for you." And then I've got 2 brand new LOs that just got their license in the last 90 days that I'm teaching, and then I've got 1 LO that was a broker for a long time, moved from California to South Carolina, found me and said, "Hey, I want to work for you."
Yeah, so you just said there's a couple branch managers that came over. Yes. Now, were they running a P&L?
Yes, they were running a P&L.
So let's talk about that a bit. This is interesting. When I was leaving to go to the broker side, and I didn't run a P&L. I was a loan officer. I had a small team, but I didn't run my own P&L. So everyone's like, "Dude, you're going to struggle running the numbers, running the P&L. Why don't you just start a branch here and run here?" What's the big difference between like a net branch and opening a smaller type mortgage brokerage in terms of the, is there much different?
Well, it's the control. It's the control. The, is that you
but
don't.
But the number side, like the P&Ls are basically kind of the same.
Obviously the cost of a mortgage is the cost of a mortgage. I mean, there's certain things. Okay. It's just, you know, going with the broker side, if you're working for a broker shop, you know, you don't have the 15 middle managers. You don't have, you know, everybody that's trying to get, you know, 10 bips on this, this guy's getting 40 bips on this.
It's insane,
You know, absolutely. And, you know, it's just, and all the red tape, you know, we have compliance, obviously, but we only own half the compliance, right? So you and I own compliance on origination and compliance on processing. We don't own the funding compliance. Mm-hmm. We don't own the underwriting compliance. So our compliance bill's cheaper. You know, it's just an overall more lean business model.
Which goes back to the consumer.
Exactly.
So we've the consumer in mind. It's just, there's a big difference between a net branch, running a branch, and then the broker side.
Absolutely.
And it really comes down to the red tape.
Exactly.
And all the overhead.
Yeah.
That's the big difference from a business owner.
And so much of the net branch stuff is self-inflicted. You know, they come up with all these stupid rules because some attorney said this one time somewhere else, and they're like, "Oh, we need to do that." And then that's, you know, that's another $27 per file cost, you know, across how many, you know, when you divide it over how many files, and you get 47 of those things in that company, you know, that's $800, $900 worth of stupidness.
Junk right in there. Gotcha. Now, when you started as well, any struggles with this side? You started other businesses, but is there something you could point out to everyone out there when you started on this side? That was it, the compliance? Any kind of roadblocks that you saw?
So the struggle bus I had was processing, because I really did not know what processing meant.
That's right. Well, you're so new just to this industry.
So if I had to do it again, I would not have straight up opened up my own business. I would have I would have switched over from retail to wholesale and would have went and worked for a broker
for a year
to figure out what that was about. Obviously, I'm happy where I am, but if I could do it again, I would have done that. And if there was anybody thinking about it, I would say, "Hey, go find a good broker with a good reputation in your area, and go say, hey, I'm thinking about opening up my own broker shop. I want to open up my own broker shop. Can I come work for you for a year to learn the ropes?"
For your specific situation, too, because you're newer to the industry.
Right.
What if you've been in it for 10 years, and you know the industry, you know all the basics, you know the guidelines? What do you think about? That's what I did. I've been in it 9 years, but trust me, it's hard.
But like, I mean, it's not everybody can, you know, not everybody can own a broker shop. Not everybody can run a P&L. You know, not everybody has a mentality. And you don't know that. You don't know you can run a broker shop until you've been a broker. I mean, you don't understand, you know, the relationships with the different lenders. You don't understand the relationships with the credit reporting companies, the relationships with the work number. You don't understand all
that was all done for you before at a retail spot.
Right. Yeah. And some people aren't interested in that. And once they get that done, like I've got one of my loan officers, amazing guy, you know, doing really, really good. And he's like, you know, goes, he was a branch manager, and he's like, you know, he goes, you know, Jason, he goes, That's not interesting to me anymore. He goes, I just want to originate. I want to do good. I want to help
seen
a bunch
that
of people.
A lot.
And you know, it's and maybe he'll change his mind. If he does, man, I'll help him out. I'll proofread his business plan if he wants to go open his own shop. But you know, that's some people just don't want to do that or can't do that or they think it's going to be great. But then once you get into it, you're like, holy smokes, what did I sign up for?
Oh yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's been I'm so glad I did it this year. We just started generating revenue in March.
Nice.
And we're having a great year. Mm-hmm. But man, I'm run thin. Sure. You know, I was looking, I'm like, I think I have a gray hair here. I'm losing a little bit more. That's a business owner mentality.
Absolutely.
But that's where people have to figure out it's a business.
So with the
it's not a job.
What they have to when figure you own out. It. Absolutely. What they have to figure out is are you the type of person that will work 80 hours for yourself before you'll work 40 hours for somebody else? And if that's the answer, if you're that guy that, yeah, I'm going to bust my butt, I'm willing to work 80 hours a week for myself more than I want to work 40 hours for somebody else, then absolutely, man, go grab the bull by the horns, open up your shop and crush it. But if that's not your mentality, then just go hang out with a broker, hire an LOA, hire an LP1, LP2, whatever it is, and just run your own little thing.
Cool. All right, so I really want to, if you're okay, I want to break your brain a bit more about the business side.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, so you've owned other businesses at the coin shop. You don't own that anymore?
No, I sold my half to my
business partner. But you had employees,
yes.
Right? Managing employees. This is a big thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I struggle with this, with do we want to bring on a bunch more people, but how am I going to hold them accountable, right?
Sure.
With your background, right, in the Navy, I think that's helped you out, right, to manage people?
It would definitely help. I mean, I started off as an E-nothing got promoted to senior enlisted. I got a commission. I became an officer, got promoted to, several promotions in the officer corps. Getting out of the Navy, it was, and start hiring civilian employees, it's a different level. I mean, you can't hold them accountable. You can't yell at them. There's plenty of times where I yelled at people in the military. And that's what you did. Not that I was right, but that's what you did.
Well, sure.
I got had my head ripped off. I don't know how many times in 20 years. But you can't do that in the civilian world. Mm-hmm. If you do, they're gonna file a complaint or leave or both. So getting into really learning to respect people more and respect differences more and respect diversity more was very important. And I learned that the hard way by having a couple really good employees that were like Jason. He goes, "You keep treating me like this, man. I'm not gonna be here much longer at all." And that hit me hard. So it's a matter of understanding that employees are your greatest resource. I mean, it's the mortgage is a commodity. Yeah, you're helping people, but if you don't have good help, and then you're not gonna be able to help more people. If your employees don't feel respected, don't feel desired, don't feel important, then they're gonna do a crummy job. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna show up and want to work. They're not gonna want to show up and want to support the business. And then your customers are going to feel it. Your clients are going to feel it. Your realtors
it goes all the way down, absolutely. Right? That's what we've seen in any business, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? So the things and the coin shop's named me the first business. I owned a veterinary clinic with an ex-wife, with employees there. So I've owned businesses off and on since 1999, mostly on since 1999. So it's a matter of understanding then that employees are your greatest resource. It's all about treating them right and having the right culture. I had one of our loan officers the other day said, "Hey man, what do you think about us hiring another loan officer?" And I said, "Well, it depends on who it is. It's not like I don't want to go hire somebody else." And then I had a loan officer call me the other day, a broker who'd been in the business 5 months. And, she was the way she was asking questions, the way she was responding. I'm like, you know what? I said, this isn't going to be
good
fit
for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Might be good for someone else. So you really had to learn how to be, because being direct and transparent when owning a business is very important.
It's
vital, right? I'm really learning that. But you had to learn how to do that in a direct manner without yelling.
Absolutely.
That's tough. I mean, I'm Irish. I hold it all in until the end.
Yeah.
You know, that's not good. So these are things that I'm really working on right now myself.
Sure.
And maybe at some point I could pick your brain on that.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
That would be cool. All right. So managing employees, it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, when do you decide, do you look at your own strengths or your team strengths and try to stay with what you're doing and then look to hire for the ones you're not as good at?
Absolutely. So I learned early on, hey, whatever you can hire somebody to do, and this was a military thing of delegating, whatever you can delegate to somebody that's going to be able to do it 80% as good as you, you do it.
80% as good as you, right. You should delegate that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Because you're never, no one's ever going to do it exactly how you'd want to do it, but it's okay. You don't have to, don't let perfect get in the way of very good. You know, take, you know, let the employees and give them very broad, unless you're talking about a virtual assistant, which I do a lot with virtual assistants. Unless you're talking about a virtual assistant, give your normal good employee a broad stroke pen to be able to use and write how it's going to get done. Because chances are they're going to come up with a smarter, better way than you're going to tell them to do it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, you're hard-headed. You're like, I know everything.
Yeah.
And it is funny when you do ask someone, what's your opinion on this? And they come up and you're like, wow, all right.
Absolutely.
But then you also have to have the confidence to allow them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the delegation part you're talking about, which is tough. These things seem simple, but they're not.
You got to understand what it is that you want them to do. And you got to understand what it is they're doing. If you just have them doing something, say, hey, go take care of this technical thing for me, and you don't understand what it is, you don't know if it's being done right or not. I had a chief engineer in the Navy that I was doing a checkout or learning, proving to him that I knew enough about this one particular hardware system. And I really didn't know much at all about it. And he just ripped my head off. And he's like, Jason, you can't manage magic. You know, you have to understand what it is that you're managing.
Manage magic.
Yeah, right. And, you know, if you've got some social media guy that's on your team that's doing all this stuff, or you've got, you know, some tech guy or whatever, and you don't understand what he's doing, well, how can you manage it? How can you make sure that he's doing the right thing for the company, in turn for you, in turn for your clients? Mm-hmm.
And trust is, well, that's me.
Uh-oh.
Come on, Ricky.
Uh-oh.
I blame Ricky for the phone. So trust is important, too.
Absolutely.
With employees.
Mm-hmm.
So you're figuring your strengths out. Then you're maybe hiring for that or have someone on your team. You're delegating.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to just make sure, listen, I know they're good, they understand it, we've hit these two spots, but then the trust factor, you just got to let it play out, right?
Absolutely. And until you feel completely comfortable that you could, you know, leave them running the stuff, then you have to talk to them in the morning and in the afternoon about what's going on. And what I have my newer employees do is I have them email me in the morning, hey, this is what my plan is for the day. And then at the end of the day, hey, this is what I accomplished in the day.
Every day you try to have them do that.
No, it's not try. It's
I want to get my head ripped off here by that.
And same thing with my virtual assistants that are managing stuff for me. In the morning, they say, hey, this is what we're going to accomplish today. And then at the end of the day is, hey, this is what we accomplished.
Could you touch on the VAs, the virtual assistants?
Sure, absolutely.
I've always thought about diving into that, but I think people just don't know what it is.
Oh, you're silly if you're not. So, virtual assistant is somebody that's working, you know, somewhere virtually. It could be on the other side of town. It could be on the other side of the country. It could be on the other side of the world. That's your employee. I found the two current ones I had. I found through a referral from a previous virtual assistant that I hired on Upwork.com.
Okay.
Upwork is just a website. You go, you create an account, you post a job. It could be a one-time job. It could be a long-term job. And there's people all around the world that are virtual assistants that sign up on there with their resume, with all that kind of stuff. Mm. And they'll do whatever it is you want them to do. How I started using them is database management. So I didn't want to take the time to go put people into the CRM. So what I would do is whenever I got a text via a lead or an email lead or a phone call lead, I'd call them, leave a voicemail. And of course, a lot of times we drop the ball as loan officers and don't ever call them again. So I realized, hey, I need to get this stuff into a database, a CRM, whichever CRM you want to use. And they
what answer. Are you using right now? Can I ask?
So I'm using Django, but I'm not thrilled with it.
Okay.
It's too cumbersome for my employees to probably realize.
Okay.
I've used BeInTouch. I've used Whiteboard, I've used Velma, I've used a bunch of them. BeInTouch is probably my favorite so far, but we're using Django currently. But really the answer is whatever CRM you're going to use is the best one. If you're going to use
it's
great.
That's the common thing.
But the virtual assistant job to start off was putting people into the CRM and then selecting the right campaign for follow-ups type of thing. Then I started, you know, if I had to call somebody at a particular time, you know, call at a particular time, I'd shoot the virtual assistant email, say, hey, put this on my calendar. So she would then create an appointment on my calendar so that my phone starts dinging at 3 o'clock whenever I got to call Joe Smith.
Are they proactive about doing things or is it more do this, the virtual assistant?
It's do this.
It's do this.
But
okay.
They are always asking for more work. And they do great. So
are they per diem? How are they paid?
I'm paying per hour.
Per hour.
Yep.
Okay.
And right now, and what I've been paying for quite a while is $4 an hour. And that is very, very good for people in the Philippines.
Wow, $4 an hour.
Yep.
From when they're working, it's not like a 9 to 5 either.
No, I've so it was when I started off, it's like, hey, you can get, you know, 5 hours a week. You get, you know, then I moved it to 10 hours a week. Now I'm paying a 40 hours a week, and I started doing 40 hours a week, even if I don't have 40 hours of stuff for them, because that way, they're not going to be courted by somebody else, or they're going to get distracted by some other employer that has them doing stuff. I know that I've got, and it's $4 an hour. I mean,
if you're trying to go lean, I mean, that's the way to do it. Yeah.
But you know, if you give very, very good instructions on exactly, you know, go to this part of the database, enter this data in this spot, create, and then tell them exactly what to do, how to do it, and they do it, and they do it well. They do it better than I would do it.
Right.
I'm not even worried about 80% with them. And then the other thing I started using them for is research. Like, I'm about to start doing some, I wanted to start doing some mailing lists, you know, mail a bunch of veterans, you know, hey, I'm a veteran, hey, help me refi, you know, let me help you refi your mortgage. So I have her go do research on mailing list companies. Hey, find me the top 5 rated mailing list companies in America.
Wow. Hey, I'm getting one of these tomorrow.
Yeah, help, you know, like for reviews. Like, I really wanted to push, this is a perfect example of a great, win that my virtual assistant did for me recently. Is I realized, hey, you know, I've only got like 50, 60 reviews on Google and 50, about the same on Facebook, and I've closed, you know, a bunch of loans. So I said, hey, I want you to go, here's a list of every loan I've closed. I want you to go through my email, through Serum, through everything that you've got, and find an email address for every single one of these people. And then I want you, so once you do that, I said, all right, I want you to go through Google and Facebook. And I've delegated Google and Facebook business to her, to where she could has access to do stuff. Limited access, but she has access. So I want you to find every single person that's left a review and then write yes or no in the spreadsheet of who has. And then now that we've got all this done, now we know who's left a review, who hasn't, I want you to email every single one of these people, you know, and give her a script of what to email. So she emailed as me, because my email's delegated to as well. And in a week and a half, I got 30 to 40 new reviews.
Wow.
So
it was simple direct text, text when you're dealing with virtual assistants at least.
Yep.
Right? Someone in-house might be a bit different. Right. But they're still, it's still the same.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying I'm silly for not having one.
Yeah, I mean,
or at least two. Why not?
Yeah, they're great.
That's great, man. All right, so let's get in. You touched on a little marketing right there, like you're saying, mailings.
Sure.
This is the fun part for me, right? The marketing side. I don't know if you want to touch base on any of the websites that you just got.
Sure.
At all?
Yeah.
Because this was interesting to me as well, especially being Home Loans Inc. And how are you getting like these?
It's just spending 15 minutes on Google. I mean, on GoDaddy. Like, I'll be talking to somebody and it'll pop up, my website idea will pop in my mind and I'll jot it down. And then, you know, later on, I'll jump on GoDaddy and see if it's available.
Mm-hmm.
Many times it's not, but then, GoDaddy will have their domain, you know, buying service, and you pay them $70 and they'll go try to get that domain for you. So like the big site that I recently purchased is refinances.com.
That's huge.
I mean,
right?
I was like, you know, I wonder if that's available. And it wasn't, but you said, hey, give us $70 and we'll go try to buy it for you. And they did. It wasn't cheap and I'm not doing much with it right now, but I had a great collaborative with Garden State Home Loans yesterday.
Oh, cool.
About that. We're going to talk to some other tech companies to start building out. And what we're thinking about doing, or what my envision is a website that is all about, hey, you don't want to be a lead. We don't want you to be a lead. You're here for data. Here's a mortgage calculator. Put in your credit score, put in your loan amount, put in your estimated property value, and this is what the rates would be for your refi. If you like this, fill out the application here, we'll get a hold of you.
So it's a personalized automation.
Exactly. Right. And then I want there to be pages on, hey, you know, if refi, you know, for cash out, why, you know, what's the drawbacks to that? What's the good thing about it? You know, probably put in something from Barry Habib's, you know, if you're even going up a higher rate, how's that going to save you per month? You know, calculated like that by paying off this car and this other thing. You know, that's the whole idea by that. And then what we're going to do is, you know, have the country broken up, you know, regionally, you know, with some other, you know, like-minded brokers. I'll have all the lead, you know, if the lead comes in as the Southeast in my states, that'll be my guy. You know, if it's somebody in the Northeast, you know, if there's somebody in California, we'll kind of break it up. Absolutely, man. We'll get you in on it.
Nice.
So that's kind of the way that I'm thinking about taking that. I bought VARefinances.com. That was cheap. Yeah. Nobody had thought about that. I mean, literally it cost me like $10 to buy VARefinances.com.
Yep. That's unbelievable, right?
So something that's been really successful for me, and it's really organic marketing, is I've taken all, you know, you and I have said the same thing 100 times mm-hmm. of teaching somebody about credit score. Hey, and you know, you tell people what AUS is, and if you got to refer, what you got to do. You've probably said that a million times. You probably say it in your sleep. You've probably talked about closing costs in your sleep. So I started realizing all the stuff I say over the, all over again. I started putting it in a Word document and created, you know, little success manuals. I turned around and turned those into books. So I wrote a book on VA loans called VA Mortgages Declassified.
Cool.
30, 40 pages. It's written by veterans for veterans. It cusses. It calls, you know, it calls out the Marines as being, you know, as being dumb. You know, it's just a fun thing.
Nice. We have Chris Griffith on the next week.
Yep. You know, Chris is great. And I had Chris do a peer review on that book. So, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. He's a good friend of mine as well. Man, I can't wait to pick his brain too.
Yeah, he's a spectacular individual, man. And such a heart for fighting. You know, it's you know, fighting for vets.
Social, you got books, you got some.
Right.
You're like you said, with the websites, you're working on that, how to get it out there.
Exactly.
So, all right, let's keep going with the marketing. So on social media, what are you doing there?
So what I do for social media is successes. I throw out there, hey, you know, whenever I close a loan that, you know,
right,
that's
where,
hey, I did this, you know, kind of thing. It's really just successes. You know, I'm not real salesy. I throw funny things on there, but it's not a, hey, call me, I'm the best loan officer. None of that crap. It's,
yeah, we found that doesn't work as well as being authentic.
Right.
And showing who you are as a human being,
right,
and who you are. I mean, you don't have to put your family on there if you don't want to, but let's mm-hmm. show who you are and then mix in the successes, like you said.
Right.
That's the best way with the social, organically, what I found.
And the other thing that I've done on social media is friends don't let friends use lenders. What I've taken is whenever I've gotten somebody that's shopping and they've got a loan estimate from a retail place, and I say, hey, you know, please send me that to me. I say, here's mine. I'm not asking you to send it mm-hmm. to me so I can beat it. Here's mine. Please send me the one you have because I'm going to use it. It's going to help my business, my family. And then I'd go take snippets of the retail LE and, mm-hmm. and my LE and put it together in one post and show how I save this guy $3,000 and $100 a month.
Yeah.
And I've every single time I've done that, I've closed an additional loan out of doing that.
And that's one thing to point out. You're not just throwing crap on social media. You're taking the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking an actual LE, breaking it apart,
mm-hmm.
you know, pointing arrows, whatever you do, putting it out there and giving real knowledge to people.
Exactly.
Instead of just trying to just get leads.
Exactly.
That's what the past few years, you've seen a lot of lead companies come out.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Oh, we can do this funnel, this or that.
That's all crap.
It's crap because unless you have a really huge system
mm-hmm.
to weed itself out, it's very tough. You're just beating your head against the wall.
Yep.
I've seen it. I've tried a bunch of them. You maybe have tested some of them. And it's a lot of crap, man.
Yeah, it's
tough.
I mean, that thing is a number. I mean, everything's a numbers game. But you know, that's not me. That's not the business I want to run. That's not the relationships I want to develop. You know, and a mortgage is a relationship. You know, and I don't mean like in a broad sense. I mean, it's like dating a woman. I mean, you're getting somebody to the closing table is like dating. You know, you can't date somebody. You can't get somebody to the dinner and to a nice evening afterwards by texting, by emails. It just doesn't happen. You have to have that human communication on the phone.
It takes one or two or three or four tries too.
Exactly.
It's not just like, hey, want to go back to my room?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Doesn't really work.
And if
that
if it does, that's not a quality woman right there, man. The whole idea of buying a massive amount of leads, it's not, you know, I want to help people that are raising their hand and say, hey, I want help.
Yeah, yeah. You had touched on mailers too.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing that really starting to come back for the local type originator?
Yeah, like absolutely. Ourselves? So what my plan is just, I've heard some loan officers, some other brokers that are having success with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm starting to hear it too.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed, the ones that are saying they're doing a success, have success with it, is it's regional specific. So it's not like, you know, I want to do Charleston, you know, South, you know, not even the far side of South Carolina, not Greenville, because that's a different market.
Right.
You know, if I was in Philadelphia, I wouldn't go put mailers to Pittsburgh. You know, it's a, you
totally
know, you know, brokers are part of the community. We're helping people in our community advertise to our community, you know, kind of thing.
All right. So you're working on, so again, it's really all about finding a niche with mm-hmm. marketing.
Yes.
That's really what it comes down to. And hitting specific spots and getting back quality leads instead of just casting this big wide net and getting all this crap. All right. So you have a lot of, this is cool. You have a lot of different ways of marketing, or what I learned yesterday, I like to call it messaging now instead of marketing.
I like that.
That's what Scott Shanks said yesterday. It's really cool. I'm like, that makes sense because we're delivering a message. We're not just throwing crap out there. So it sounds like you're, I get that.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that one. So you have a lot of different ways. Your team's growing. Do you plan on hiring more loan officers? It sounds like you may have to.
So if the loan officer comes to me and it'll be a good fit, then I would entertain.
We talked about that.
Like I had a had a loan officer the other day said, hey, I heard you doing this, you know, and he talking about comp. And I said, well, for the right guy. And then I left it at that. I didn't pursue him. You know, he expressed interest in what I was doing, heard, and I'm like, you know, but he's not somebody I want. What I'm really concentrating on is building out my processes and my team as to be as efficient and good as possible. Because, like, I don't have clock in, clock out. I don't have days off for my employees. They know they could come to work whatever time they want. They can leave whenever they want. We don't track days off. Mm-hmm. You know, they could take 2 weeks off. I said, as long as you get your job done, I don't care.
That's cool because you're very regimented. You tell them, I want this in the beginning, end of the day. Yep. But do what you have to do for your own life. Good culture. I mean, can we talk about that a bit? Culture is huge.
The culture is king. I mean, there's nothing more important because, like I said, if your employees aren't happy, they're not going to do a good job. Your clients are going to be unhappy. You're going to get bad reviews. You're not going to get referrals. So what we do is we actually have somebody designated as the culture queen in the office. Part of her stuff is to set up little every other week we get together and have lunch together on the
table. So important,
table.
Right?
So like one week we all brought stuff to assemble sandwiches. So one person brought bread, one person brought cheese, one person brought meat, you know, just little things like that. This last week, it was really cold. So somebody, cooked a big pot of chili. One person brought in the Doritos, one person brought in cheese.
Cool.
Kind of stuff. It's doing stuff like that together is what we do.
Well, because this industry is, or just owning a business, it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you and I being business, we'll go. Like you said, 8 hours. Like we're like a racehorse. Mm-hmm. Just send us off. But you have to break that up, man. You get burned out.
Absolutely.
Right? All right, so you're marketing like crazy. We talked about culture. And what I just wrote down, what I heard and what I want to get to is you're a quality guy. And you want your clients being taken care of, right?
Absolutely.
And if you're doing all this marketing, more leads are going to come in. So what are you doing on the back end to make sure the quality's there?
You're talking about for my employees?
Yeah, so like once the lead comes in, right? Because, I mean, you're not one of these, but there's a lot of people out there. I might just get a bunch of leads and let's throw it out there and see what happens. And if they close on time, they don't. You're not one of those guys.
No.
So what if you have volume? I think sometimes people forget about the back end.
So I've got a 54-page operations manual.
Okay.
That I wrote over a period of time, added to it, to where there's a checklist for pre-qual. There's a checklist for when contract comes in. There's a scrub checklist. There's a approval condition checklist. There's appraisal checklist. There's a checklist for everything. And every checklist gets completed, and then it gets turned into me to double-check the checklist.
Wow. On every deal.
Yep, on every deal. And every Tuesday, there's a very scripted email of, hey, it starts off, you know, weekly update for address, last name, and then it says, it's very important to read this email in its entirety every week. Then it says, hey, once we get clear to close, so we start off with, once you get clear to close, this is what has to happen. It discusses attorneys, discusses balancing, discusses that. Then it says, all right, so now you know there's a lot of work to get done after we get your last condition. Here is what we need from you, and here's why. And it's bullet point. And here are the things we're waiting from the vendors. And I started, and that was key to us, is, you know, people didn't understand.
It keeps you out of the fire if something doesn't happen, too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So people didn't understand how much of impact the, you know, waiting on insurance is, how much impact waiting for the title. And we put in there, we ordered title on this date. You know, we ordered insurance on this date, you know, and we're still waiting. You know, so that way, and that goes to borrow, co-borrow, and it goes to the buyer's agent. Does not go to the listing agent.
Okay. Does not go to the listing agent.
No, because I don't want them knowing what the conditions are. Now, I do call the listing agent every week. And
sure.
I call the listing
agent. There's no reason for them to know that anyway. It just keeps them out of harm's way. Make them not overthink.
Exactly.
So you have processes for everything. The back end. Did you build, this is a great question. Did you build that before you said, let's go gung ho with marketing?
Oh, absolutely.
Had to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I still don't feel that I'm good, as good as I should be.
Evolving, right?
Like I spent all day yesterday at Garden State Home Loans with their ops manager. not with sales. I don't know crap about what they do for sales. Mm-hmm. I spent all the time discussing, hey, how do they set up file? How do they disclose the file? How do they handle conditions? How do they pre-underwrite? You know, all that kind of stuff. And I've took pages of notes.
Yeah, that's pretty, not standard in the industry, but marketing, you can do a billion different things.
Right.
And that's really to specifically how you want your business. But the back end of mortgages, like, it's kind of the same.
Yeah. I mean, mortgage is the worst service industry in the world. I mean, we're horrible at service.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's so complex. You wait on so many other people to do everything. You know, generally, you're always waiting on somebody else. It's not like usually you get a doc in. You get to that doc, you know, in 2 hours, maybe 4 hours at the most. You know, somebody uploaded something overnight. You're going to get into Flowify or whatever POS you're using in the morning. But, you know, we're just horrible at service because there's so many moving parts, so many people to do stuff.
You can't be perfect.
No, absolutely.
Now, lenders that you're using, do you have a lot of them?
No.
When you started,
that was a big mistake I made. I spent a lot of money, a lot of time. I thought it'd be cool. I'm like, yeah, I just got to get all these lenders. So I made a huge list of like 50 lenders, and I signed up for at least 30. And I wrote a $100 check for each one of those for the VA.
Oh, for the VA.
Because that's most of my, and most of my stuff was VA. And like last year, 54% of my loans were VA. This year is probably more like 46%.
Cool.
But most of my stuff's VA loans. So if you want to do VA loans, send us a check for $100. Okay. So that was $3,000 that I wasted. Most of my stuff goes to United. They weren't my main guy this year. My main was Cardinal Financial.
Yeah.
I've really got away from them. I don't want to get negative on your thing, but you know they're not somebody that I'm using anytime soon. I'm just started dipping my toe with Caliber. We've got a couple with Home Point.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't tried out PRMG yet, or kind of did, but I don't want to get into that.
Yeah.
It's not nice. but you know what I actually from Fuse, I took some notes from Fuse, and I talked to, I would say it goes to all roads lead to UWM. I spoke to,
really does.
I spoke to so many brokers, big brokers, small brokers. I spoke to correspondent lenders. I spoke to warehouse lines. I spoke to all the different vendors, and talking to my vendors in the Charleston area, the attorneys. A lot of them don't like half of them don't like eClose 2.0. But besides that, I mean, it's, They make it so easy, and we get so spoiled, and you get so frustrated, and it's all that matters, really. If nobody understands anything else, what matters is the customer experience.
That's all that really matters. Right?
And,
we'll take the pain. We're making good money. We're gonna take it, and it's gonna be like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
And if the lender is the lender is not setting up for a good customer experience, by not asking for stupid crap over and over and over.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a lender that I sent the same thing to 3 times. I literally named it "Don't Lose This Again." .pdf.
That's what you named the PDF.
Yeah.
And they lost it.
And they lost that one too. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, there's, you know, it's.
I found too the easier it is for the loan officer to get through the portal and do things, or not as many conditions, right? Mm-hmm. Just easier. Your eye kind of fits here on like the UWM, Ricky, the UWM, the portal, like your eye goes certain places, right? So when it's easier for the loan officer or the
processor,
the processor, it's going to reflect back to it. It falls down to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes total sense.
Yep.
Like, it sounds really simple, but if we're having an easier time, then we can give more of our mind and our education to the client to set up better plans, right?
Absolutely.
Makes total sense.
Right.
I mean, everything seems so simple, but it's so complex.
So if we as brokers, or people thinking about becoming brokers, aren't thinking about the customer experience with every single thing that you're doing, you're going to totally have a lot of upset people.
Cool.
Because it's all about how good it was for them to get that mortgage.
And if you're a long-term guy, you want this business to go long-term, you have to think of it that way.
Right. And think about who's the people that... the lenders that people complain about don't have that mindset. And even retail, you know, you see so many complaints on Navy Fed, you see so many complaints on Veterans United, you see so many complaints on Quicken, you know, retail. It's because they aren't thinking about the customer experience. They're thinking about the bottom line. Hey, how can we get the most, you know, how can we close the most loans? It's not, you know, how can you make the customer experience good?
Cool. All right, well, we have about 5-10 minutes left.
Okay.
All right, so I have two quick questions I want to get out of you. Where do you see the industry in about two to, everything's moving so fast, right?
Oh, absolutely.
2 to 5 years, like, where do you see it going?
Oh, it's eventually, you know, the epitome is there's going to be some iRetina, you know, thing on your phone, and you scan your iRetina, and you'll be approved for a mortgage. I mean, that's where it's eventually going to get. I mean, everything will be tied so together, and until, you know, and but that's eventually where it's going to be. You know, it's, you know, all, everything will be tied in. You know, the first, you know, the one day certainty, once that catches on with government loans, and you start using, you know, you start using the verify the dockless assets for government loans. Once Fannie and Freddie get out of conservatorship and start having some real impacts, VA and HUD will follow suit to it. I don't know if rural development will, but you know, everything's going to be different. I mean, there's things that are going to come up with that we can't even think about yet. And even think about our kids today are going to be working in careers that don't even exist yet.
No.
You know, everything's changed. But think about, you know, 1-800-PetMeds changed the veterinary industry. You know, 1-800 contacts changed ophthalmology.
Uh-huh.
You know, Expedia changed, you know, travel
agents. Uber.
I mean, you know, Uber changed the taxi in the industry. I mean, there's...
What do you think that it does if we get to there where they're scanning our eye and everything? Where does it leave guys like us?
So I think
owning smaller shops.
So owning smaller, it's going to be, you know, we're going to be for the people that aren't tech savvy or are complex loans that are, you know, that have something that kicks it out of the AI stuff. You know, AI is, there's always going to be some way to where AI is not going to work. Just like, but that's no different than a human. Not every loan officer can close every loan. You know, I'm sure there's loans that I've talked to people and said, yeah, I can't do this. I don't see a way path forward. And they found somebody else that could do it. You know, there's always going to be something for us.
So it's not doomsday, but technology is going to get better to hopefully help us to educate our clients more, go over budgets with them, and be a true advisor.
Exactly.
In my opinion, I think.
100% correct.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Be a true advisor. All right. And then if you got one or two things, you being a really business guy, you're one of the first that's like a real business guy.
Sure.
Something you can tell everyone out there in the broker channel that are looking to start a business in the mortgage, is there one or two things you could give some advice?
If you're thinking about opening a shop, I mean, you really got to ask yourself, hey, are you willing to be everything? Your IT, your PR, your human resources, your everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, if you're just want to close 5 to 10 loans a month and just want to be you, then man, go for it. Open up your own broker shop and just be that. If you have any aspirations to grow more than that, and you're having trouble saying no to people that, hey, you're probably not the same fit, you're not the right fit. Like Todd Bitter has no issue with that. He's only going to work the loans that he wants to work. If you're not that mentality, you're going to have trouble opening up your own broker shop, because you're going to grow, and then eventually you're going to grow so much, you got so much coming in, you're going to drop the ball. And unless you hire, and you could actually manage people in the way that people deserve to be managed, it's going to be a recipe for failure. So it's a big undertaking. You really got to think long and hard before you start making those decisions, because you go hire somebody and you can't handle them, you don't treat them right. I mean, you just really cause a significant disruption in that person's life, which is very disrespectful.
Yeah, their families, bring it full circle.
Yeah, I mean,
they're not transactions.
They're gonna go, you know, weeks, you know, if they decide to leave because you're just a jerk or you just can't handle it and you fire them, you know, that's, you know, they're, you know, if they're living paycheck to paycheck, which most people do that we hire, you know, that's going to ruin their year.
Yeah, it's no good. Well, there you have it. Jason Charon, Home Loans, Inc. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, sir.
Thank you. This was Broker to Broker, brought to you by AIM. I'm JP Hussey. Have a good day. Thanks for listening to the Broker to Broker podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss a single episode. Head over to aimgroup.com/broker to broker and subscribe on any platform where you listen to podcasts.